Many top policy concerns in this election cycle are issues especially relevant to women. However, about three-quarters of newspapers' presidential coverage is written by men. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we use recent survey data by the Fourth Estate Project as a jumping-off point to discuss gender and election news coverage. My guests are several women journalists across the state: Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, Diane Bystrom of the Kerry Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics at ISU, and our own Joyce Russell of Iowa Public Radio. Presidential news coverage. What's gender got to do with it? After this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Male journalists have been the primary storytellers of this year's election news since January. And during the GOP primaries, the general election so far, men have had their stories published in the traditional print media at a 3-to-1 ratio compared to women. And this is according to new survey data released by the Women's Media Center, compiled by the Fourth Estate Project. National and state newspapers were surveyed, including those with the nation's highest circulation rates: the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, USA Today. We'd like to use this data, this survey, today as a jumping-off point to discuss gender and election news coverage. And to do that, we've invited several women to be part of our discussion today, journalists across the state, to spend the hour with us, share their thoughts, their experiences, their stories that may illustrate what it's like to be a woman journalist in this day and age, and maybe what it was like and how it was different in years past. Joining us, first of all, four guests today in our Des Moines studio. We have Kathy Obradovich, a political opinion writer for the Des Moines Register. Hi, Kathy. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Kay Henderson is with Kathy in Des Moines, news director of the Radio Iowa Network. Welcome to you, Kay.
Top of the afternoon to you.
Very good. Diane Bystrom is with us in Ames. Diane is director of the Kerry Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State University. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
And finally, also in Ames, I believe, our own Joyce Russell, State House correspondent for Iowa Public Radio. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
Let's get a broad overview, if Diane could provide that, to what this survey data means, and if it's anything new, Diane.
Well, actually, from a research perspective, it is nothing new. It's a kind of a conundrum in journalism where now more than half of our journalism students are women, but yet on the campaign trail, there's fewer women than men. It's been borne out by all the research. The only level that is getting more equal, actually, is the coverage of local candidates, where when you have a city newspaper maybe covering the Ames City Council, for example, or candidates for school board, that tends to be more equitable. But what our research has shown, my own as well as other researchers, is once that gets up to the governor's level, again, one of my recent studies of the 2010 campaign found that 63% of the reporters covering gubernatorial campaigns in 2008 were men and 39% women. And it even gets more, I think the percentages go down even more when it comes to covering the presidential election.
Mm-hmm. What about the differences between print and broadcast?
Well, I think they're both they have similar numbers in proportion. One thing that I have found about this year is that as far as what they consider political embeds, you know, those are the political reporters who follow and tweet and blog the, you know, presidential candidates' every move crisscrossing the country. Mm-hmm. That does seem to be more equitable this year. And many people think it's because of the age of the reporters, not necessarily the sex of the reporters. One of the surveys shown is that on the television networks, actually, Fox News, ABC, and CBS have more women reporters on the ground this cycle, and CNN and NBC have about an equal number of male and female embedded reporters on the campaign trail. And so, you know, these would suggest that at least television this year has more women covering the campaigns than newspapers do.
So what I'm hearing you're saying, Diane, nothing new here in these findings, but in some specific areas, some subsets here, there are some steps, strides being made.
Yes. And again, most people who see these numbers coming out of television think a couple things going on. Television and the fact of very visual media, television wanting to have a more youthful appearance. Most of these reporters are very young reporters, and that seems to be more open to women. And the other thing is just those skill sets that younger reporters bring to the mix now, you know, having to tweet and blog and things like that and use YouTube. And so that there is some actually there was a male reporter who wrote for Columbia Journalism Review about he remembered when he was on the bus, you know, Boys on the Bus is a 1973 book that talks about the men covering the 1972 election. And so he was on the bus then. And so he wrote a piece for Columbia Journalism Review on how much the bus has changed. And he very much feels like he's one of the older reporters on the bus. So he noticed younger people, women. And then there also was a survey in another magazine about the number of women covering the campaigns for the cable and national networks.
We'd like to have our listeners join us this hour as well with any observations. Perhaps you notice the difference in the way women and men journalists cover politics, or do you even take notice who has that byline, if it's a male or a female? Or do you feel that female candidates are measured according to a different standard when it comes to political reporting? That's an aspect we want to talk about as well. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Let me turn to you, Kathy Obranovich, because this specific data that I mentioned in the introduction has to do with the print media. You have been in the print media working for how long, would you say?
Oh, gosh. It's time to date me. It's been about 25 years.
25 years. So this is, I assume, not a surprise to you either.
It's not, although I have to say my own experience right now is very different. In my newsroom, the political editor is a woman. Our chief political reporter is a woman. I'm a woman as the political columnist. My own experience in the newsroom is that that women are writing a lot of the political stories at the Des Moines Register.
Okay, take us back 25 years or so when you entered this field. How was it different in that way?
I think that 25 years ago, I would probably say that, and I was working at the Quad City Times in Davenport. We weren't necessarily sending candidate or reporters out covering the national presidential campaigns, except when the candidates came to our area. But it was mostly men covering politics at that level. Women, however, were covering a lot of the local government politics. It wasn't. Even 25 years ago, it wasn't that the women were only writing about, features and family issues and healthcare, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, why would you say this makes a difference? Why should we pay attention to this?
Well, I think that it's interesting. I wouldn't necessarily say that having more women or having more men than women covering the presidential race leads to some sort of sexist slant in the news. And I don't think that the study drew that conclusion. I would caution against that conclusion. I think that good reporters talk to all kinds of people and mm-hmm. are informed by all kinds of people when they write their stories. So while there may be differences in some of the topics as you look in an aggregate about what women are writing about versus men, I think that if when I read coverage of the campaign, I don't see things stand out at me that say, oh, a woman never would have written that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But back to you, Diane, though. Perhaps you can fill us in on some of the ways that coverage changes when more women do reporting.
Well, actually, the research results are a little bit mixed, and I'll kind of tell you the three things that they found is that, as Kathy said, male and female reporters don't cover political candidates for the most part any differently. For example, there's been numerous studies, and they've even put the gender of the candidate involved. And so, for example, male and female reporters cover male and female candidates just about the same. And the reason researchers think this is true is that instead of sex stereotypes governing the coverage, it's really more the institutionalization of the media. You know, they basically meet certain standards. They cover people in the same way. And so as far as negative or positive coverage, most of it's neutral. And so they do cover candidates differently. There has been some anecdotal evidence that women candidates feel like female reporters are harsher on them than males. And again, it's more anecdotal. It's because they feel like the women want to be, you know, seen as tough. And so there's some evidence that way. And more than anecdotal, there are a few studies that support that. I think the biggest thing is, and this comes out clearly in the research, and it's kind of the same type of conclusions we get when women are elected to the state legislature and Congress, for example. They bring different issues to the table. So the biggest difference between the male and female coverage of candidates is that women may bring a different perspective. For example, they might bring, you know, they might be more focused on health care. They may be more focused on education. They may be more focused. They bring other issues to the table that they think are important. And of course, the media plays a very important role in campaigns by agenda setting, you know, not telling the public what to think, but what to think about. And so there are numerous studies that do show that men and women reporters have kind of a different set of issues sometimes when they cover a campaign.
Kay Henderson, let me turn to you. What do you make of this survey data, and how does that match up with your personal experience?
It is interesting to reflect on the unique Iowa Press Corps, which last year, before one of our number left, was dominated by women. There were more women reporters at the State House than there were men. That contrasts greatly with what was the case in 1987 when I first went to cover politics at the State House. It was a very male-dominated press corps. You requested anecdotes, and I have one available.
Please.
I remember when a Des Moines Register reporter, a male, went in the men's restroom on the House of Representatives floor to interview House Speaker Don Avenson, who had gone to the restroom. This is an area in which I'm not allowed to interview Don Avenson, as you might suspect. And so I made it clear to Speaker Avenson and the rest of his staff the next time he was giving interviews in the men's room, I would be there as well.
How was that received, Kay?
There were no other exclusives in the men's restroom that I heard of for the remainder of that session.
So both parties were agreeing that this was going to happen, this interview was going to happen in the restroom. I thought it was perhaps a case where, you've got to use – I can corner this guy here.
Exactly. So that may have been the case. But it seemed to be unfair to me as a female for politicians to be giving interviews in the restroom, and so I made that clear to them. The other thing that occurs to me as I listen to all of these statistics is that in many respects, journalism is ahead of the rest of corporate America when it comes to women in leadership roles. Kathy just mentioned that the political editor of the Register is a woman. That person's boss, until a few months ago, was also a woman. Contrast that with what's happening in Fortune 500 companies, which means 500 companies. Only 18 of those companies are led by female CEOs. That is, according to calculations that someone else did, not me, math is hard, that would be 3.6% of the people who are running Fortune 500 companies are women. If you look at radio station general managers, for example, 18% are women. So I think women in our particular industry, broadcasting, are doing slightly better than they are in the business world as a whole.
And, you know, Kay, this is Kathy. At one point, I had a reader email me and accuse me of sexism for something that I had written about. It must have been about some woman in politics. I don't even remember what it was. And I said, well, you know, you can take this up with my boss, who's a woman, my boss's boss, who's a woman, my boss's boss's boss, who's a woman. You know, it's like, you know, which of us do you want to accuse of sexism?
And the other thing that occurred to me as Diane was talking about some of these statistics is that she actually convened a group a few years ago, which I was part of, as well as Kathy, and one of our colleagues from the Omaha World Herald, David Kotok, who talked about trying to promote someone within his newsroom who was a woman to cover politics, and that woman not being amenable to that because of the duties of childcare, primarily falling to women. And that's often cited in a lot of these statistics because politics is different than a lot of other beats. It's really a 24/7 job when you get
more,
to this
demanding,
point.
More demanding?
It is very much more demanding than other beats, if you will, in journalism as a whole.
Kay, I asked Kathy this question, so I need to ask you, how many years of reporting/journalism do you have?
Well, I started at the Iowa State House in 1987, and prior to that, I had a one-summer stint as the editor of my hometown newspaper. So I've been doing this a way long time.
Okay, so we're about a quarter century with you, too, aren't we?
We are over a quarter century.
I'm gonna have
was hoping that you weren't good at math.
Kay and I are the same age.
Joyce Russ, we haven't heard from you yet. Your reflections on this as you hear this data.
Well, I've been in the business just a little bit longer than Kathy and Kay, and during my years in journalism, not all in political journalism, but in my years in journalism, I have actually experienced wanting a political assignment and not getting it because they just weren't quite ready to send a woman to the State House. Now, I think that there's less, far, far less of that, but maybe not. Maybe that isn't completely gone away.
Right.
These are considered plum assignments if you've got the fire in your belly to cover politics or the State House.
Joyce, were there any reasons ever given to you? I don't know how many years ago this would be that, or was it just kind of assumed that a woman's not up to the task?
It was more assumed that a woman wasn't up to the task, and but that's a long time ago, and I'm thoroughly entrenched in the work now, and I don't think that happens as often now. I have an anecdote too from the State House.
Okay,
Kathy and Kay will remember that when they were both covering the State House, people would get them confused, even though they don't look anything like each other. And similarly, when Janine Beck and I were covering the State House, people would sometimes call me Janine and the other way around, even though I am exactly Janine, the age of Janine's mother. And so I think that there is just kind of still kind of a sense that it's kind of odd for women to be doing this.
Okay.
I don't think that's completely gone away.
Joyce Russell is with us of Iowa Public Radio, Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, and Diane Bystrom of Iowa State University, talking about gender and presidential news coverage, political news coverage, what gender has to do with it, citing some statistics. Looks like some progress being made in terms of opportunity for women and coverage provided on an equal basis. Tim is in Cedar Falls listening to our conversation. What do you have to chip in there, Tim?
Well, I guess my question would be if I could draw a comparison to, say, National Football League head coaches. There are only 32 jobs like that out there, and the people who are in them have been on track for a long, long time to get them. Will this issue, this imbalance, correct itself over time as more women are on that track and work their way up? Because you wouldn't think that a chief political correspondent or whatever the title might be, news director, would want to leave that job after working for so long to get there. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, very good. And Diane, you mentioned something interesting that pertains to what Tim is talking about. For over a decade, women have outnumbered men by, I think, 2 or 3 to 1 among journalism, mass communication graduates.
Yeah.
But somehow that's not bubbling up, is it?
Well, and I think getting back to something that Kay said earlier, what the research finds as well is that, you know, women are in journalism and they are in newsrooms, but they're not necessarily covering two areas, politics and sports. And sports is even more of a gender gap in sports coverage. And that tends to be, you know, research shows, and as Kay has said, related to the nature of those beats. I mean, you know, politics is and sports, they're time consuming. They take up evenings, they take up weekends. And when reporters get to the point where they're trying to balance work and a career in their family, you know, sometimes they opt out for not doing the political beat. They want to do something else. I know of anecdotal stories. I mean, my own story. I started out as a political reporter many, many years ago and didn't get into kind of this business because of trying to balance work and family, but instead, you know, did find once I had children and working more of a regular kind of university schedule
right.
was a lot easier than covering politics. You know, so I I know of several reporters. I mean, there's been reporters in Ames that have, left, coverage there because of the, hardship of trying to cover politics, even local politics, and raise a family.
Yeah, and we've seen our state house, we've seen that happen with some of our state house colleagues, too. Mm-hmm. Kay said the hours are bad. That's true when you're covering campaigns. It's true when you're covering the state house.
And Joyce Russell, I know you have a family. When your kids were younger, was that a factor that you had to think about, an extra challenge that you had to face that perhaps male colleagues didn't?
It was quite challenging, and a supportive partner is essential.
Okay, let's go to Julia in Iowa City. She dialed 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Julia, what's on your mind?
I was just going to comment that a couple of weeks ago I was listening to an NPR weekly news roundup where the host was a guest host and male, and he had two or three guests on, only one of whom was a woman, and I think he interrupted her every time she spoke. He didn't interrupt the men. So, I mean, that's another little anecdotal thing, but I wondered if there's any study showing how much, say, women actually get on the air when they are featured.
You know, it's interesting in preparing for today. This is Kay in Des Moines. I read some statistics regarding the chat shows, those Sunday programs that we all watch on the respective network and cable channels. And there is a very small percentage of women who are invited on those programs as guests, partly because there's a small percentage of women who serve in the United States Senate and the House. That's one factor of it.
Yeah, it's a problem at the State House as well. I just spoke to a group not at UNI that was trying to be part of promoting and recruiting women to run for the State House. And, I think the bad economy actually makes that worse, that, women are maybe less interested in giving up their time, taking time away from their families in a bad economy. You look at our newsroom. You know, we talk about – I just talked about all the women covering politics, but the study made me curious about the makeup of our newsroom. And my perception, if you'd asked me last week, would be, oh, yeah, we've got about 50-50 women and men in the registered newsroom, or maybe more women than men. And so I just grabbed the staff list and started counting names, and it wasn't even close. There are far more men than women. It was
still,
about 20 – yeah, well – or again, I don't know what has happened in the last 10 years, but I suspect that this bad economy and the difficulty in the industry has caused some women to leave the industry, maybe in greater numbers than men.
Okay, we have to take a short break, and we'll be back with our guests. We're talking about election news coverage, national presidential news coverage, and what gender has to do with it. We're talking with Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa. Diane Bystrom joins us from Iowa State University. Joyce Russell, our own Joyce Russell, State House correspondent, with us. We'd like to have you join our conversation as well. When it comes to presidential news coverage, what does gender have to do with it? Have you noticed any difference in the way women and men journalists cover politics? Or do you even take notice? Do you feel that female candidates are measured according to a different standard when it comes to political reporting? We haven't touched on that, no. We want to touch on that. Also, when we come back, I want to ask our journalists here if when they're covering a story, political story, if it matters when we seek those expert opinions, if we pay attention to the gender of those experts. Do we look for some kind of balance there? That's when we come back. 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. Also, an event coming up at Iowa State University. Diane will mention this. Candy Crowley coming to Iowa State University in November. Listen to more about that when we come back. This is River-to-River from Iowa Public Radio News. So nice to have you with us on this edition of River-to-River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're asking the question today about political news coverage, what gender has to do with it. And joining us to discuss several facets of that, Diane Bystrom, director of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University. Also, Kay Henderson, news director of the Radio Iowa Network, and Kathy Obradovich, political opinion writer for the Des Moines Register, and our own Joyce Russell, State House correspondent for Iowa Public Radio. And, ladies, I did tally. We have 75 years plus of political reporting expertise to draw on this hour. That's good.
Thanks for making us feel old.
Yeah. But who's counting?
I'm making you. I should be. You know, I'm pointing out the credibility of our guests and the wisdom in our ranks. That was my intent anyway. We want to reach out to our listeners. Do you notice any difference in the way women and men journalists cover politics? You take notice. Do you feel that female candidates are measured according to a different standard when it comes to political reporting? We want to get to that this half hour. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Jennifer. Don't know where you're calling from. Jennifer, where are you?
I'm in Iowa City, Ben. Thanks.
Hey, Jennifer, what's on your mind?
Well, I just had a quick comment for your guests, see what they had to think about this. I've been a journalist for over 20 years, both national and in the state. And my instinct is how important it is, how important mentoring is among female journalists, and how it helped me as a political reporter incredibly to have more senior female reporters come and help me out when I was a junior reporter. And I've since tried to do the same among, you know, my younger mm-hmm. Reporters. So.
Did you look at more senior local reporters or on a national scale? When you saw a Carol Simpson, for example, did you look to her, for instance?
Are you talking to me? No, Ben.
Yes, Jennifer, yes.
No, not when I was a reporter. This was back in D.C., so that was in another life. But I looked up to the female reporters that were on our staff to help me out with.
Okay, very good. Diane Bystrom, could you comment on that? Because we haven't raised that point. The mentoring aspect of the importance of mentoring and younger women having the ability to look up to women they can aspire toward.
Well, in general, research has shown that mentoring is important to women in any profession, and that's certainly that what we see in academia, you know, a lot of things that we work on at Iowa State University and certainly universities across the country, because, again, there's an inequitable distribution between male and female faculty at most institutions of higher learning. And so mentoring, very, very important part of the process. There's been studies of corporations and businesses that have also found that mentoring in the newsroom was important to the process. I'm sure that every woman on this panel can speak to the fact that how they were mentored. Again, you know, I started out as a reporter in Nebraska and received great mentoring from basically all male editors. And so, you know, I think that the mentoring that does occur in the newsroom can be very, very important to the careers of female reporters.
Kay Henderson, can you look back on a important female mentor in your life?
Well, she wasn't a political reporter, but she was a pioneer on WOI. It was Dorcas Spear, who was one of the first female voices on radio in the state of Iowa, who worked for Iowa State University Extension and did a number of programs which were heard across the state on WOI radio. Mm-hmm. But I agree with Diane. I mean, I have several male mentors who have helped me along the way, and I don't necessarily think it took a female to guide me on this path of political reporting. In fact, some of my male mentors have been incredibly helpful along the way. Mm-hmm. Also, I will also point out that my own father didn't have sexual stereotypes about what I would be when I grew up, which was odd since he was born in 1919 and I was born when he was 52. Mm. So oddly enough, there was not an expectation that I would become a mother. There was an expectation that I would become whatever I wanted to be. Mm. So I think all of us in many ways can point to people of either gender who has helped us along the way. And it doesn't necessarily mean that as a woman journalist, I need to see and be guided by another woman journalist. Mm-hmm.
Kathy Obradovich, what's your personal experience? Does it matter what gender your mentors were?
I don't think it matters. I don't think gender matters that much. Although I will say that I had mostly men as editors when I was coming through, you know, my early years as a reporter. But I did look to really strong women reporters who were working at the Quad City Times when I was a young reporter, and I think what I learned from them is that you know, these reporters were fearless when they asked questions. They weren't impressed by people who had age and status that they would ask tough questions regardless. And I think that was what I learned from them. I will say, though, again, not to bring the economy into it too much again, but I think that it's important for media organizations to refocus on mentoring and the importance of mentoring in a time when perhaps we have fewer editors, we have fewer middle management across journalism. And those were the people who may have been more responsible for taking reporters in hand, teaching them as they go along. And now, just with tighter staffs, tighter budgets, we just don't have as many of those people who are there to mentor young reporters. And I think that's important regardless of gender.
Joyce Russell, when you look at those who mentored you, did gender matter?
I don't think so. As I've been sitting here thinking about, especially the editors that I've worked with, by far a more important consideration than gender is how much they remember about being a reporter. I mean, I've worked with many editors at National Public Radio over the years, and the ones who were closest to their reporting years were by far the better editors, male or female, because they remembered what it was like to be on the other side. I do also, as I've gotten older, really take seriously bringing the younger people along, and I'm always looking for opportunities to do that. And I would say that the atmosphere at the Iowa State House among the press corps is a very supportive environment. I think you see more, you see a lot of collaboration and helping others out, even though in many cases we're competing against each other.
And fewer interviews in bathrooms, or none.
it's not good radio, let me tell you.
They tend to be a big echo in there, among other things you wouldn't want on the radio.
I was talking about the other thing.
Goodness.
Let's get to make sure we get to a couple of other things. Diane Bystrom, I wanted to go to you because I know Candy Crowley will be coming to ISU. Let's talk a little bit about this has been in the news in recent weeks, the moderating duties for the four presidential and vice presidential debates this year, evenly split between male and female journalists, and this for the first time. The moderators will be Jim Lehrer of PBS, Bob Schieffer of CBS, Candy Crowley of CNN, and Martha Raddatz of ABC, decided by a debate commission and announced after, I think, a long and mostly secret selection process. This announcement followed an unusual period of scrutiny from the public in the press. We saw it reported because only one woman, Carol Simpson, I believe a University of Iowa graduate, I believe, had moderated a presidential debate in the quarter century that this commission has been holding them. That's an incredible thing in itself. What are your thoughts on this development, Diane? And if you'd like to mention Candy Crowley's coming to ISU as well.
Well, actually, I think that Carol Simpson and Gwen Ifill both moderated vice presidential debates, and we might want to check on that because it's my understanding that Candy Crowley is the first woman to moderate a presidential debate.
Okay.
And I know that, and I'm pretty sure, Carol Simpson and Gwen Ifill, by the way, were also both on campus through the Katz Center as the Mary Louise Smith chairs, and so I believe they both did vice presidential debates. It seemed like when it was announced that it was Candy Crowley, the announcement said she was the first woman to moderate a presidential debate. I think Candy is one of those that, I think she's come a long way at CNN. She's now their chief political correspondent. So I think, she's come up the ropes and she's earned the fact that, she should be considered for that role. It is outstanding, really interesting and troubling in some ways that this is, 2012, and it's the first time that a woman is serving in this role, because there have certainly been fine reporters before her, including Carol Simpson and Gwen Ifill and so many others that have covered politics for their television stations.
But isn't it interesting that even in this microcosm, we have the vice presidential and the presidential debates, that there's a tiered system, there's a hierarchy, and the women climb to the lowest tier and then to the second tier, right?
Yes, and I think so. And again, that tends to be, Jim Lehrer has done a lot of debates. Bob Schieffer has as well. I think there's sort of a notion of going back to the well often with those two. And so Candy is kind of broken, I guess, what would have been a glass ceiling. And I think she's done that through hard work and the fact that, she's risen to be CNN's chief political correspondent, hosting their Sunday morning news show. Bravo to her. When we booked her as our Mary Louise Smith chair, she had not been selected to moderate the October 16th debate. And so this is just, you know, kind of icing on the cake. And so, you know, we're really excited to have her on November 13th. She'll be coming a week after the election to help us all here, you know, analyze it from her perspective. And certainly having her having served as the moderator of the October 16th, which is the town hall debate format. So, again, that's another thing to throw out is that that format has a little bit less moderating in it than some of the other debate formats. But okay. She is doing the town hall debate.
Candy Crowley coming to ISU to speak Tuesday, November 13th at the Memorial Union at the Iowa State University. And let's talk a little bit about how you feel this election, this current election, has been shaped, and perhaps you can reference other previous election cycles, is being shaped and is likely to be shaped. The coverage, has there, that you can see, Kathy Obradovich, been any coverage shaping that has to do with gender?
Well, the effort to attract women voters has been a big part of the narrative of this 2012 race, and what campaigns are doing to either attract or turn off women voters, the discussion of social issues and how that affects women. And so, you know, I think a lot of that has been driven by the campaigns themselves. It's been driven by campaign rhetoric. And a lot of times it's been driven by the fact that a lot of the candidates and most of the candidates are men. It's very hard to imagine us talking about a female candidate having a war on women, even though that candidate may be equally conservative on some of the social issues. So I think that part of the discussion about sexism when on the campaign trail is directly related to the fact that we don't really have equity when it comes to the number of women running for office.
Kay Henderson, I wonder if you noticed when we look at, well, I guess this year we have to look to Michelle Bachmann in the primary, but then in previous years, Hillary Clinton, perhaps others there. Have you noticed that there's a different type of coverage for a female candidate than for a male?
Well, as Diane indicated earlier, female candidates often feel as if they are treated differently in the press. Stories about their attire. I recall there was a story during 2007 about a particular blouse that Hillary Clinton wore on
the cleavage the U.S. story.
Yes, yeah, you said it, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. which was written by a woman.
Which was written by a woman.
Yeah.
I guess I don't think that there's as much of that as there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be, when I first started reporting in the 1980s, this idea that female candidates for statewide office had to pass some sort of legitimacy test. And this was very evident in the race that Jean Lloyd-Jones ran against United States Senator Chuck Grassley. She was decidedly an underdog. And she was repeatedly pressed during that campaign about whether she was a legitimate challenger because she couldn't raise a lot of money. Well, it wasn't as if she had been a man, she would have been raising a load of funds to run against Chuck Grassley because he was the prohibitive favorite. So I think if you talk to her, her experience would be far different than that of Christy Vilsack, who is running for Congress this year, in terms of the way that questions are posed to her and the idea of a female being a quote-unquote legitimate candidate.
Mm-hmm. Joyce Russell, what's your view on that?
Well, speaking of the Christy Vilsack campaign, I noticed some coverage, I believe it was last week, where her opponent, Congressman King, referred to her as young lady. And it made me wonder whether that would have even been noticed or reported on a few years back. I mean, our sensitivities are heightened, and it sounded really inappropriate, but I think that it's progress that sounds so inappropriate. I think a few years ago we might not have even noticed that.
Let me posit that perhaps it's just throwing it out, that it's perhaps oversensitivity. Let me throw out the examples of John Edwards and his hair. How much did we talk about his hair? There was that viral video that went about that. We talk about Paul Ryan, his athletic physique. We talk about candidate Obama, his physique coming out of the waves in Hawaii. Are we just being a little too sensitive here?
Ben, I want to talk about that one because that comes up all the time when I'm on panels.
Okay,
what happens is that there is a documented difference in the media at all levels that women too tend to get covered more in terms of their appearance and their image than men. That significant difference is shrinking just because of the reasons you just talked about. So it's not that women are being covered less in terms of their appearance. Men are being covered more in terms of
that. And we're getting more superficial in our coverage.
So thus, the significant difference between men and women in that aspect of their coverage is shrinking. Again, not because of women are covered less, men are covered more, but there still is a statistical difference. And what happens is it's those same anecdotes or those same examples that you just pulled out are the ones that people talk about. And so they don't talk about all the certain times that women and men are covered differently. I can tell you this about the research, about one of the things I basically focus my research on is the differences in media coverage between male and female candidates in mixed gender races. And I've studied them everywhere from the local mayoral level through governors, through U.S. senators, and through presidential races. And what I've seen over time, I started this research back in 1995, something like that. And so what I've seen and others have seen over the time is there are very few differences now in the newspaper, and mainly newspapers, what I've looked at. I'm doing television this time around with Michelle Bachman, but mainly I've looked at newspapers. And so there has been over time, there's very few differences in the coverage of male and female candidates running for local office, for governor, and for U.S. Senate. And that, it was one of these things where I kind of thought, well, gee, all the research is done on this, and so I'll get out of looking at this. Well, what happened in 2008, and we saw it not only with Hillary Clinton, but Sarah Palin, I suspect we're going to see it with Michelle Bachman, is that at that presidential level, those differences still do exist. And so every single study that's come out on Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton has documented huge differences in the way that they were covered, both by newspapers and by television.
Kathy Obradovich, when you cover Michelle Bachman, or Sarah Palin as candidates, do you have an extra antenna up to make sure that your copy is clear of any?
I have spent enough time talking to Diane that I'm definitely aware when I feel like I'm about to write down that Sarah Palin's wearing a red suit, that I have also reported on what male candidates are wearing. And frankly, my meter on that is unless there's something newsworthy about what they're wearing, like it's really weird, or it signals an effort by the candidate to project a certain image, then I just don't think it's worth mentioning. But I have to say, I think in the last race, I've written a lot more about Mitt Romney appearing at various venues in jeans and no tie. As an effort to project himself as being a more casual, approachable person, whereas 4 years ago he never went anywhere without a necktie on. And I thought that was worth noting as an effort by a candidate to project a certain image.
Do female candidates have that opportunity to kind of step into a more casual sphere? For a guy, you take off the tie, you roll up the sleeves, you're there.
Probably not. But on the other hand, they can make what they're doing work for them. And I'm remembering others on this panel may have also seen this. There was a forum at a Christian evangelical forum for the Republican presidential candidates, and they were all up on the stage. It was a roundtable setting. And Michelle Bachman got up and poured water for everybody at the table. And it just made me gasp, but she made a calculated move that for that audience that was okay, and that was going to win her votes and not lose her votes.
Interesting. We don't have much time left, but I wanted to get to this. So jump in if you have an answer or an anecdote here. The sources you use for political stories. Do you pay attention to gender? And if so, when and why? Kay Henderson.
I thought about that during the break. I don't, because I want to provide my listeners with the context of a story. And frankly, I want the best expert to tell them about it. I don't really care whether they're a man or a woman. Sometimes whether they are a man or a woman can provide a particular context if it's, as Kathy is discussing, the quote-unquote war on women that's been discussed about so much on the campaign trail this year. Really, I don't go out with a mindset that I am going to only quote a particular gender in the story.
I would just add, In general, I agree. This is Joyce. In general, I agree with that, although it does make me, when I look over, I'm always just like, hey, going for the best source. But all things being equal and there's not another female voice in my story, I'll admit I go to the story, go to the female, and it will sometimes, and it makes me uncomfortable if it's all male voices in my story.
Who else wanted to quickly get in?
This is Kathy. I would just say, Gannett Wide, we have asked our reporters over time to think about the diversity of sources in their stories, think about the diversity of faces in pictures in the newspaper. And we do ask reporters to think about, you know, if one source will do, you know, if, you know, one source is equally good, you know, to think about getting a diversity of voices in your stories and in your pictures.
Diane Bystrom, I would like to ask you to provide the end bookend for this conversation in 30 seconds. What thoughts do you want to leave us with?
Well, I think the thoughts to leave us with is, you know, I'm probably less troubled by the percentage of women covering politics. I want it to increase. I do think, as others have mentioned today, that it has to do with the nature of covering politics and the fact that it makes it sometimes difficult for women reporters to balance work and family life if that's what they need to do. And so I'm really more troubled by the fact that we're really ending on right now, and that's the fact that I do think that the media, both newspapers and certainly television, can do a much better job of who they include in stories. And I think Kathy's point about including a diverse voices is a very well taken one.
Okay. Thank you all for joining us, Diane Bystrom, Kay Henderson, Kathy Obradovich, and Joyce Russell. It's been a pleasure talking with you this hour.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. All females. Oh, here's a male. Technical support from Dennis Reese, and in Ames, help from Grant Garrett Van Leeuwen. Executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk show is Jeff Schmidt. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.